This is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, we bring you another bonus Good Talks episode presented by NBC's Good Girls. Today, I'm talking to Michelle Lee, the editor-in-chief of Allure magazine. If you've ever worn a lipstick, bought a hairdryer, or even thought about moisturizer, you certainly know Allure, which is the most incredible beauty magazine, website, and brand with over 10 million monthly readers. Michelle is one of the youngest editor-in-chiefs ever. She's the queen of boomerangs, and she speaks digital fluently. She is the epitome of the next/new generation editor, and she's as brilliant as can be. So I'm really excited to welcome her today. This is Michelle Lee on Second Life. First and foremost, I'm so delighted that we're having a second to sit down and getting a chance to chat because I can't wait to get into all of our discussions of all things Allure because you're doing so many interesting and diverse and cool and modern things. But
oh, thank you.
I'm truly have been enjoying it so much just as a consumer and a reader of both the print magazine and the .com. Big fan. But the show is called Second Life. So let's talk about your first act, if you will.
Well, it's really funny because when I heard that it was called Second Life, I feel like I'm on my third life now. So I feel like we'll go through those.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, there have been a lot of things. So you've had a really interesting career path. And I know that you started out studying journalism, but also in like a really amazingly hands-on way. Can you tell me a little bit about your college experience?
Yeah, of course. So I'll actually go a little bit further back because I think it helps to explain things. So I grew up mostly in a small town in Connecticut called Monroe. And then when I was 16, my dad lost his job. So we ended up moving to South Florida. So talk about major culture shock. So my sister is 4 years older than I am. Mm-hmm. So she was already in college. She was going to Duke. Very expensive. Like, yes. I need to tell anyone. So by the time I graduated, I didn't want to be a huge financial burden on my parents. So I decided to stay in state. I went to the University of South Florida. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think that having had most of my education in Connecticut, education in Florida is totally different. And I think that I always knew from the time I was in high school, but also in college, I wanted to not be in Florida anymore. So all throughout college, I worked. I'd always been a really good student all throughout grade school, middle school, high school. I think I was like a straight A student. So college for me felt kind of easy. At the same time, sometimes when you find school to be easy, you can get very bored. So I was not the type of kid all throughout my life that I knew what I wanted to do. Like, I think that, you know, I've met people before who are like, you know, I knew since I was in grade school that I wanted to be a journalist, mm-hmm. not me. So my sophomore year of college, I needed to choose a major. And I chose journalism. And I think back about it now and I'm like, why did I choose journalism? I think partly, to be totally honest, I think I liked the building. That was like one factor in it where I was like, I really like that Mass Comm building. I really want to be there. But then when I thought about my whole life, I've always really loved writing. So my last 2 years of college, though, were totally different. And I think because, again, I had different aspirations. I knew that I wanted to get out of Florida. And I knew I wasn't going to an Ivy League school. So I always really considered myself to be a bit of an underdog. And I knew that that meant that I needed to work twice as hard as everybody else. So I actually scheduled all of my classes for my last 2 years to be at night. And I worked all day long. So by the time I graduated, I was actually a staff writer full time during the day at an alternative weekly newspaper called The Weekly Planet.
So how did you even get hired, though, at, you know, when you're a junior in college?
Yep. So between my sophomore and junior years, I started to take internships. Mm-hmm. So I had an internship first at The Weekly Planet. And this shows how long ago this was. So one of my jobs as an intern was I would receive fax messages that were movie listing times in town. And one of my jobs as an intern was to type in the movie listing times so they could appear in the newspaper. So doing super menial tasks like that, where it certainly wasn't showing any great writing talent. So there was one day, and I don't even
know. But attention to detail.
Attention to detail, very important. I knew how to take fax messages. So I one day decided to write an essay. No one had asked me to do it. I just decided to write an essay, like an op-ed about racism. Hmm. And I handed it to the editor-in-chief at the time, Susan, who's still a very good friend of mine. And I think I just felt very like emboldened to be like, I'm going to write this. And I'm not suggesting you have to publish it or anything, but I would love to get your feedback on it. She loved it. She ended up running it. I think because I had done that and taken that big step, they decided to hire me as a full-time writer. So I you know, kind of started out writing, like, you know, some small things, writing some bigger things, to the point of where I said, look, I would really love to work here. I can schedule all my classes at night. Could I come on as a staff writer? So I'm doing completely different things now, obviously, than I was back then.
What was your beat?
So my beat, I didn't really have a specific beat, but the Weekly Planet was really, it was a local weekly newspaper that covered all of the Tampa Bay area. So towards the end, though, I started getting assignments for cover stories. So the cover story that put me on the map, I guess you could say, there was a student at USF named Peter Taborsky. So he was a student inventor, and anything that you create on university property basically belongs to the university, right? You can't claim it as your own and get a patent for it. So he had invented something, which I can't remember what he invented, but he wanted to go for a patent and get it as his own. University said, sorry, you can't do that. We own it. So long story short, like, had he just gone, okay, great, you guys own it, and, like, can I have my name on it, it would have been fine, but he decided to fight it. And it escalated to such an insane point to where he got arrested, went to jail, still fought it. He gets thrown in prison.
What?
So he was in prison for, I want to say, like, several years or something. So it was like this insane story where I fully embedded myself into it. I studied him. I met with him. I stayed with his parents.
Oh, my gosh.
I did such a thorough reporting job of this. I was actually at his parents' house the day that he was released from prison. So I, like, wrote this whole, like, amazing story, and one of my professors at University of South Florida saw it, and he was like, you know, I really would love for you to apply for this internship called the ASME internship. Mm-hmm. So for people who aren't in journalism, it's the American Society of Magazine Editors, and you get to go to work in an internship at whatever brand is on their list. So Glamour was my number one mm-hmm. of the brands I was participating, and I got it. And I got an internship at Glamour from that. So that was kind of my first foray into, oh my gosh, I can escape. I'm free.
I'm heading to New York. So you go up for the summer. And what was the program like? And what were your takeaways?
Yep. So funnily enough, even though I'd been doing pretty hard journalism in Florida, I remember flying up to New York and I thought, I'm going to be a fashion editor. So as part of the ASME internship, you get to spend 2 weeks in every department. So my first department I was in was fashion. And for anyone who has worked in fashion at a magazine before, it's not fun when you're an intern. So basically, it's like working retail. Like, I had worked one of my summer jobs when I was in high school was at Macy's. So I was, like, folding jeans and stuff when I was in high school. So it was very similar to that because you're basically taking big racks of clothes and stuff and packing them up and sending them off. So it wasn't even that experience was necessarily the bad part. I think it was more I had no concept of what a fashion editor was.
Right.
Right. You end up seeing in movies and TV shows and you think you know what it is.
It looks very chic.
Oh, it looks very chic. And then just, like, seeing what people were actually doing, I was like, you know what? I don't think I want to be a fashion editor anymore. So my next 2 weeks were actually spent in the features department. And I thought, wait, this is actually perfect because I'm a writer. I'm an editor. Plus, I can work in fashion. Perfect.
Got it. Okay. So that was your first taste of it. And then what happened from there?
Yeah. So after Glamour, I started looking around. And I think there was a part of me that thought, like, oh, I should find my quote unquote dream job, right? Your dream job doesn't always exist, especially right out of college, right after your first internship. So funnily enough, Parenting Magazine mm-hmm. at that time ended up sort of being this next step for a lot of Glamour editors. So there were maybe like 6 or 7 former Glamour editors who had gone over there. So I got a lot of recommendations being like, you should hire this girl. So that was my first full-time job where I assisted 5 editors at Parenting. Again, not my dream job at that point. I think I was 21 years old.
I was going to say, what did you know about parenting our
nothing,
kids?
Nothing. I knew nothing about kids. I didn't have kids at the time. I wasn't even thinking about kids at the time. So I thought, oh God, I know that I'm not going to be here forever. So I started freelancing pretty heavily for Men's Health at the time. I started writing for...
P.S. though, what did you know about Men's Health?
I didn't. But
So where did you get ideas for pitching stories? Or, like, what made you think, you know, I assume you would look at the magazine and see what areas you could work on and pitch stories. But, like, what made you feel comfortable or give you the sense of courage to do something like that?
Well, it's funny because throughout my career, I've actually always really loved writing for men's. Mm-hmm. I think it's partly because, so my husband, I met in college. So the two of us moved up together, like, before we were married. And he would always read, like, Men's Health and stuff. And I remember at the time, like, the voice for women's publishing has changed quite a bit.
Drastically.
Right? Because when I started out, the voice was still like 11 ways to please your man. Yes. And like it was very women's magazine-y.
Or like, here we are on top of the mountain speaking down to you. And yes. Like, darling, everybody knows this. And if you don't know this, then you're not anything.
100%.
Like, it was very exclusive.
Totally. Whereas men's, they were snarky, they were funny, it was clever, it could still be smart. So there was something, I think, for me that was just, I was actually very drawn to that voice and I wanted to write those things. So now I think because of the internet and because mm-hmm. just frankly women's publishing has changed so much and we've come a long way, I think that the voice has become less different, I guess.
Okay, got it. So you're full-time at parenting and you're freelancing like crazy. And then what was your next step?
Yeah. I read about Cosmo Girl starting, which was like the teen offshoot of Cosmopolitan. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a place I would really want to work. So at this time, again, I had been freelancing a lot for Men's Health. I was writing like big features and stuff. So I decided to reach out to Atusa, who was the editor-in-chief, mm-hmm. and Anne Choquette, who I think at the time was like a senior editor. Mm-hmm. So I think I sent them an email being like, hey, I heard about what you guys are doing. It hadn't launched yet. I would love to work there. Anne sends me back an email right away and is like, I literally just showed someone a story that you wrote for Men's Health and said, this is the voice that we should be writing in.
That's amazing.
So basically they were like, you're hired.
Great. Done.
So I was like one of the very first hires over there. So from Cosmo Girl, I became a senior editor at Mademoiselle. And then I took a break and I wrote a book. And at that point, I was like, what do I want to do? I don't want to go back full time somewhere. So I took a freelance job at Us Weekly.
So what did you do after Us Weekly?
So after Us Weekly, I got hired at Glamour. So it was kind
back of to Glamour.
Full circle. So Cindy Levy ended up being editor-in-chief at that time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is my dream job. I honestly, throughout my entire career, never had aspirations to be higher than a senior editor. And it's like, I think about that now and it's like, it was sort of like my cap that yeah. I was like, I don't know, at this point, maybe I was like 26. Right. And I was senior editor. I thought, this is where I'm going to be forever. I just want to stay at Glamour.
Made it.
Awesome. Hit my goal. And I was happy. I was happy doing what I was doing. I was doing features. I was editing, top editing beauty. Mm-hmm. I was doing like, you know, editing some cover stories and other big things. Then about a little bit over a year in, I'm like, damn it. I get a phone call from a headhunter, and uh-huh. they were like, so we're looking for a number two for a new magazine called In Touch. It's celebrity, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, thank you. No, thank you. I'm really happy where I am. I also have only been here for a year, so I'm not really looking to jump. So the headhunter calls back a couple hours later, and she's like, will you just agree to have lunch with the editor-in-chief? Like, if it's still a no, no problem. So I'm like, okay, fine, I'll have lunch. So we have lunch. So Richard, who was the editor-in-chief, and I sit down, and long story short, we totally hit it off. So he had brought an issue, like the magazine, I think, had only had a couple issues at the time. I remember he brought an issue and kind of flipped through it and showed me certain things, and he was like, what do you think about this? And because I didn't even want the job, I was bluntly honest with him. And I was like, well, I think this doesn't make sense because this. And I wouldn't do this way because that doesn't make any sense. And you know, again, like I think that when you're in a job interview situation, you get nervous sometimes and you're afraid to say things. But I was so bluntly honest because I didn't care. Mm-hmm. So he really, I think, appreciated my viewpoint. But also he was like, I just said the exact same thing. So he could see that we were like on the same brainwave. So I remember at the end of it, I was like, so nice meeting you. You know, what are your next steps? Like, are you meeting with other, you know, your other candidates? And he goes, there are no other candidates. And I was like, what? And he's like, you're the only candidate. He's like, you're the only one we're looking at. And I was like, that's awkward. So I was like, no, thank you. You know, I'm really happy where I am. And I kind of like kept pushing it off. But again, they made me an offer I literally could not refuse. They offered me the number two job where I would have, he was like, you'd have creative freedom. You would manage a staff of about 60 people throwing money at me. So I was like, oh, I'm so sad to leave Glamour. At the same time, I can't pass this opportunity up. Plus, I thought that I didn't have a lot of management experience. Right. So I did see it as, okay, maybe I'll spend a couple years over here, get my management experience, and then I can come back and be a different person.
Absolutely. So you're doing this at In Touch. And then when did you go into branded content?
Yeah. So
And you were there, by the way, you were at InTouch for like 7 years,
yeah,
right?
I was there for a while, and I just kept, it's hard. I never wanted to stay that long, right? I wanted to leave after 2 years.
But they promoted you.
They kept promoting me. They kept throwing money at me. And the world of celebrity changed, right? Like, when I started, it was all fun and games because it's like, stars want to be just like, stars are just like us and, like, fun things like that. Towards the end, it became this nasty place, right? Like, the celebrity world ended up changing. So at this point, I had two little kids, and I felt very bad about going home and, like, teaching my kids right from wrong. But then I felt like we're doing these awful things at the office. Plus, my company at the time was not digitally focused at all. Mm-hmm. So I was, like, frustrated from a lot of different things, and I quit. Everybody thought I was crazy, but my husband was like, do what you have to do. So I left, and I went to a job that was fully digital. So this, again, sort of feels like that is my second life.
Yes.
Where I took this huge leap, didn't know what I was doing. I took a pay cut in half. But because I wanted to learn these new skills. So I got into digital, and that's where I started to learn more about branded content. So I had worked at this company called Hollywood.com, and we were launching a style site, and I saw that that's the direction that the money was flowing. So after I left there, I launched with three partners. We launched our own branded content studio called Magnified Media, and another startup.
Here we go again.
Right? Another startup, but something totally different too, because it was branded content. But also because we were small, it was the four of us, plus we had like a couple other people under us. But I was the salesperson, I was the CEO, I had to learn business, I had to learn all of these things. So it was a fantastic experience. But also, you know, when you jump into something like that, it's also terrifying.
Totally. And did you love it? Was it?
I loved it.
But you didn't stay.
I loved it, but I didn't stay because.
Let me guess, you got another good offer.
I got another good offer, but I think. Some people are meant for startup life. Some people are not. So the reason I left is that I did get another offer. So someone had reached out to me, I think on LinkedIn, being like, we're looking for a new editor-in-chief of Nylon. And I used to write for Nylon, like, way back in the day, I think probably when I was at Parenting. And I loved that brand forever. So I was like, okay, let me have a meeting with you. So we met for breakfast. It was the new publisher. And, you know, normally for breakfast, you sit down for an hour. We sat down for 2 hours because once I got started talking about, and we could do this, and we could do this, and we could do this, it just kind of kept going. So I realized after time also that I felt like I was really like their lead candidate. So I needed to make a really hard decision, like, do I stay doing what I'm doing and build towards something, mm-hmm. or do I go ahead and take this opportunity? And I feel like for me, what has always made me excited about taking a new job is, like, do I feel like it could make an impact, mm-hmm. right? Like, Nylon at the time, I think, was a 16-year-old brand, but it hadn't really fully realized, like, all its potential in digital and video and social events, everything else. So I just felt like I could do so much with that brand, and it got me excited, and that's what made me jump into that.
So you also became the chief marketing officer while you were there, while still wearing the editor-in-chief hat at Nylon. How the heck did that happen? I mean, that's crazy pants. That's literally, if you looked up crazy pants in the dictionary, that would be the definition.
when we made the announcement, I remember the CEO and I being like, I don't think anyone has ever done this before.
So what were your responsibilities like? What did you like about that? And what felt, I mean, that had to have felt kind of overwhelming too. Yeah.
It actually didn't. And it was something that I asked for.
Whoa.
So throughout my entire career, I feel like I've been someone, especially later in life, like, I love learning new skills. But the thing that I felt like was really holding me back once I got to a senior level was lack of knowledge about business. Right. And I've actually thought about, should I go and get my MBA? Should I, like, go to business school?
No, girl. It's all about that hands-on experience.
It's all about the hands-on experience, right? So luckily, when I was at Nylon, I had a great CEO who we would have our weekly meetings. And he was like, you know, what can we do to make you happy here? You know, not that it was unhappy, but, like, what can we do to get you to, like, the next level? And I was like, well, I really would love to have more interaction with, like, business. It's just one thing that I feel really self-conscious about, that suddenly as you become an editor-in-chief, you're thrown into these meetings with, like, ad clients and, like, on the business side talking about finance and everything. And sometimes even terminology. I was like, I'm going to fake it, but I don't know what you're talking about. So he was great because he was like, I'm going to include you in more of these meetings. And, like, you know, feel free, obviously, if you have questions about anything, ask me. So we kind of built up to this point of where I said, you know what, I think we should build our own nylon studio where it's all a branded content studio. So he was like, that's a great idea. Let's do it. So we were doing things that were not just nylon projects, but we were like white labeling things. Because right. nylon has a very specific aesthetic. And there are lots of brands, like fashion brands and stuff.
Very appealing aesthetic.
Oh, very appealing into like a youth market too, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of people are looking for. So we built that and he said, okay, this is basically, you know, because you're running the studio too, you should become the chief marketing officer. So my role was really, I was working on editorial, but I was also working on this other arm that was doing branded content, but also working on the overall image of who are we as a brand? Like, who do we actually want to reach? So I think I became good at thinking about big campaigns and like big buzzy things. So truly, I mean, it's two sides of your brain in that it's editorial and it's business, but both can be really creative and fun.
So you're wearing all these hats at Nylon, like 17 hats approximately. Then you get the call for Allure. What made you say, yes, this is something I want to do? I mean, especially considering like this is all beauty and you have beauty experience, but that wasn't necessarily like your main experience. Walk me through how that all happened.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think if you get the call for a brand like Allure, you have to say yes and you have to be excited about it. But again, using my kind of framework of am I excited and do I think that I can make a huge impact? I think that instantly I had that feeling. But it was going to be a lot of work because even like looking at like, you know, the Instagram following or something, there was a lot of work to do because it was falling behind in a lot of ways. So now when I think about it, I'm almost on my 2-year anniversary there. We've really shifted the entire message so that beauty is not just about products. Like, yes, we'll tell you the best mascara and the best eyeliner to use. But what we also really want to do is to redefine what is beautiful. And like one of my big missions is to kind of challenge the old fashioned standards of beauty, but also to challenge the old fashioned standards of women's publishing. And I think because it's what I started in, as far as like 11 ways to please your man, like how to lose 15 pounds in 5 days. Like I remember.
That's a real headline, by the way.
Oh my gosh. I remember all that stuff so vividly. And I'm like, it's ridiculous that was just 20 years ago. So
girl, not even.
Like, it's still happening now, frankly.
Yeah, let's be honest. But that's such a, and I, one thing that I also appreciate too is that there, you change the diversity aspect of it too, from covers to content, like the products that are being discussed, everything. And I think that's something that was so desperately needed and continues to be desperately needed.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I actually wrote in my proposal was that it was about diversity. That I think that the image of Allure somehow had become what I refer to now as the uptown lady.
White lady.
And, oh my gosh, it was the perfectly coiffed, like no hair out of place, like no pores on her skin, completely perfect looking body, everything. And I was like, I just don't think that that's what people want to look like, and it's not what they aspire to look like anymore. So we instantly sought out to like change that image. And now I think especially with our covers, we've really gone there. And like my goal is to have these big cultural moments. One of them that we had this past year was our April cover, which April has historically been our skincare issue. This year, just with everything going on, I was like, I wanted to devote a whole issue to skin color. So we had three beautiful women of color, all models on the cover. And instead of doing the old-fashioned women's magazine profile, where it would have been, we go to the Chateau Marmont and we have lunch with them and they all eat ravioli and, you know, whatever.
Yes, and push their fries around.
Exactly. So instead of doing that, we decided to interview 41 women of color about racism, colorism, like they were raw personal stories, and it went there. Like some of them were ugly. People were saying they were crying reading it.
It was powerful.
It was so important, I think, for us to do because of that moment in time too. So I still get messages on social media saying like, thank you so much for doing that cover.
Okay, so getting to the top is one thing, but staying there is another. What do you think Allure will look like in 5 years, 10 years, the future?
Can I say I don't think that we know.
Let's hope there'll be some amazing development in technology or art or science or something that we can't even possibly comprehend yet. That, I mean, like the iPhone didn't always exist. Can you imagine life before that?
Right. Like think about Snapchat, right? Yeah. Nobody thought that Snapchat would come along and like change so many different things, because Snapchat influenced then Instagram, which yes. then influenced
Facebook
and like so many other things.
which then influenced makeup artists, which then influenced makeup brands. And now some of the products that they're creating, which they create solely for Instagram, I swear.
Exactly. So I think just because things are changing so much, I mean, I definitely think that at its core, Allure magazine is still really important. And I think that my goal is to kind of continue making these big cultural moments. I think digital video, social, we've grown so tremendously in the past like 2 years. My favorite stat that I keep using is that our video views in the past year have gone up by 1,500%.
No big deal.
So, you know, it's like when I look back, I'm like, we've accomplished so much in these past 2 years that like to look at 10 years from now, I can't even imagine like what other stuff is going to happen and what other social media platforms are going to be. And like, you know, there's been chatter in the industry about like, will websites themselves exist? Will content suddenly be on like other platforms like social media? We have no idea at this point, like just the things that are going to happen in the world.
True. Although I'm looking forward to seeing what Allure does with artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And virtual reality.
Well,
I know you're already dabbling, but
we are. So we actually just launched our first ever chatbot, and we have thought about like what's the next iteration of that? Like, is there some version of AI that suddenly feels like you're talking to Michelle, and like we bring it to SMS? That's like you're mm-hmm. getting text messages from me every day being like, "Hey, I see you're at the Bowery Hotel. You know there's a Sephora nearby and there's a sale on Tarte products, blah, blah, blah." You know, so I think the future
and
of that is really
exciting.
And I can tell
that you haven't purchased it from Amazon in the last month and a half, so you're probably getting low on it. That's what I need. I need something that like prompts me. They're like, "Hey, that Dior Show Iconic Over Curl Mascara, you didn't buy one for the last 6 weeks, so you're definitely going to need one if you haven't already lost yours. So please go and buy one right now."
You need a dash button for
yeah,
all those
seriously.
So it's that I actually think for us and within the beauty world, I think augmented reality mm-hmm. is probably more immediately interesting than virtual reality. I mean, I think virtual reality is sort of like the buzzy thing that everyone wants to look at, but like augmented reality when it comes to seeing makeup on faces,
haircuts,
even thinking about like plastic surgeons, right? The yeah. fact that if you get a nose job, you can kind of see what you're going to look like rather than it being like just a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
I mean, the future of augmented reality, I think that we're just really scratching the surface of it. So we launched an app for augmented reality too for our December issue. So we had Gigi Hadid on our cover, yeah. and we did a whole augmented reality app so you can make certain pages come to life. And, like, my favorite part was that you could take a selfie with Gigi.
Yep. okay, good. So the future is tech.
The future is tech, for sure.
Tech and content.
The future is tech, but it's also in, I think that we are, again, just scratching the surface in terms of, like, what beauty is, right? If you really think about beauty as, like, how do we define that? I think that we really do want to bring it away from just being products and
right.
just being tutorials. And like, you know, the world of beauty has exploded so much that you have YouTubers and influencers and stuff where everybody is calling themselves a beauty expert.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how do we then say, no, wait, we're the beauty expert? And I think we can all coexist, but we're just such different animals.
True.
Right. So I think that for us, when I think about how broad beauty is, to me, beauty is like everything about your external appearance, but that's also tied into your internal, right? Because it's about, you know, how much does your appearance affect your psychology? And like, it's tied in with sociology and race and ethnicity
and
body and
wellness
age.
And food and lifestyle and exercise and all of the things.
Absolutely. So if we think about like, I want Allure to be the one that's not just redefining beauty standards, but that we should be constantly defining them. Like we should be that arbiter of if something happens, we're saying that this is the image of beauty right now. So I think that thinking of it that way, like the future keeps evolving, right? Because the image of beauty keeps evolving. So I think that that's definitely like what I look at as our future.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. I know you have other meetings. You need to go be efficient. I got you out of the office, so it's the least I can do is to let you go. But thank you so much for doing this.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it.
For more inspiring interviews with women like Michelle, head on over to secondlifepod.com, where we have so many more for you to peruse. If you like today's show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review us. We love seeing you spread the word on social. And now you can tag us in your posts. We are @SecondLifePod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We always want to know who you're interested in hearing from on the show, so send in your request to hello@secondlifepod.com, or you can DM us on Instagram. I'm at Hillary Kerr. The show's at Second Life Pod. Our DMs are always open. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life.